Makeshift Stories presents Somewhere, Sometime, an irregular series of short sci-fi and fantasy stories.
I'm sure we've all heard of the term in denial. One of its meanings is the act of insisting something is not true. An individual, a group, a company, a government, or possibly even a whole country can be in denial. And sometimes the actions people take to avoid the truth can get, well, a little bizarre. For example, you would think an audit is the opposite of denial, that it is an activity which is trying to reveal the truth. But even an audit can be subverted and used in aid of a denial. In this month's story, Greta, a rising star in the audit division on board the colony ship, the True North, needs one more successful case to ensure her promotion. To her disappointment, she is assigned to an audit of a small, obscure social club for amateur astronomers. On the surface, the case appears to be simple and insignificant, but she discovers something else, something that the captain and senior officers want no one to know. We now invite you to sit back and relax as you listen to Makeshift Stories 84, The Audit. Somewhere in some time, despite the denials, the truth may come out. Greta Humboldt stared through the thick diamond glass of the observation blister, watching the stars beyond. The cold pinpoints of light appeared motionless against the black, despite the fact that the bridge crew listed the True North as moving at almost 20% of the speed of light. The illusion of stillness, Greta rationalized, was a testament to just how distant the stars really were. After all, she was not the type of person to question the captain or his senior officers. In fact, by following the rules, she had been quickly elevated through the ranks to auditor second class. Greta took her work very seriously, and, as a result, she was a rising star in the charity's directorate, audit division. One more successful case, and she'd be promoted to probationary first class. She had been hoping for a much larger audit to mark her promotion, but despite its small size, she was determined to set a new standard in the audit division, getting the case closed in the directorate's favor in record time. She would leave no bite unturned, no effort spared in bringing the rogue group back in line with ship statutes. However, had the case been large enough, involving one of the professional fraternal orders, for example, and the sums affected in the millions rather than the hundreds, who knows, she mused, she might have even been moved to the office of the Auditor General. But maybe fate would surprise her, and she would uncover some unexpected, massive infraction by this tiny group, Greta fantasized. Such things had happened before. Why not to her? With renewed interest, she imagined the subject of her investigation, the Stargazers Club, its members in this very same blister, mindlessly staring out into space. With such a boring pastime, it was no wonder they had eventually engaged in other activities that ran afoul of the statutes. How did the old saying go about idle hands? They were the devil's workshop, or something like that? Greta made a mental note to look up the saying. The intention of the social clubs was to keep people happy and distracted. Clearly, granting a charter to a group like this one had been a mistake. She wondered how they had managed to get their application past the charity's directorate. But there had been a time in the first few post-launch decades, after the excitement of space travel had been replaced by the drudgery of daily routine, when any idea to distract the crew and passengers, including etching poems on the heads of pins with atomic microscopes, was accepted and even encouraged. Unfortunately, the pin engraving social club had gone very quickly astray. The microscopic art form had proved to be an excellent covert communication vehicle for a group of disenfranchised recycling engineers who used it to plan and stage a short-lived mutiny. Since then, applications for charitable social clubs were examined more critically, especially after the lengthy jail terms handed out had forced everyone on board to take their own garbage to the recyclers for the better part of two decades. An angry banging brought Greta back to the present.
Hey, you in there! I had this time booked. Get out!
The muffled voice complained through the metal skin of the hatch. Then the pounding started again. Greta wasn't particularly inclined to move, just because some irate citizen wanted her to. But she had seen enough and was ready to go anyway, so she swung around and opened the hatch. An angry off-duty crew member was about to lay into her when he noticed the patch on her jacket. No one wanted to draw the undue attention of the auditors, so he quickly apologized.
Oh, sorry, auditor, I didn't know. Please, stay as long as you want.
Greta had always been good with numbers, and had an intense sense of right and wrong. From an early age, she had seen the world in black and white terms. In preschool, she had always been the one to notice when another toddler snuck an extra cookie or didn't wash their hands before eating, which she would immediately and very loudly report. So becoming an auditor came naturally. Needless to say, Greta enjoyed her work. She rudely pushed past the now timid man, giving him a glance that said, "I'll remember you," and headed for the transit tubes. By the time she arrived, it was off-peak hours, and the next car wasn't due for 15 minutes. Greta considered walking, but decided to review the case portfolio one more time. There was no such thing as being overprepared, she reminded herself. A small detail, such as a flippant comment dropped in one of the ship's many pubs about personal income to impress a date, could make all the difference. She sat down on the only available bench. Apparently, off hours were a popular time to take the tube, and unfolded her smart paper. She called up the case file, then looked up. Everyone around her quickly ducked their heads, pretending to check their email or make a post about waiting for transit to their online public profile. A picture of Mr. Hale Bopp, president and founder of the Stargazers Social Club, scrolled onto her smart paper. The name seemed somehow vaguely familiar, but Greta couldn't immediately place a finger on it. Regardless, Mr. Bopp, a tube operator, amateur astronomer, and founder of a social club, was the epitome of middle-class respectability. And although the transit system had become automated generations ago, he was still on the payroll as a human backup in case the autopilots broke down, which explained the stargazers. The man had a lot of free time on his hands, but had done nothing until a month ago that would have flagged him for an audit. Greta scanned through the file, stopping occasionally to watch a surveillance video of Mr. Bopp playing crosswords at work, eating dinner at home, shaving in the bathroom, dressing in the morning, or reading in bed. But there was nothing unusual there. Greta would need a court order for more detailed visual records. The ship had strict rules around personal privacy, which even auditors had to respect. She exited the tube on deck one, then, after wandering around for 5 minutes, finally found the man's cabin, number 1-42, sandwiched between the only pop and candy vending machines on the entire level. Most people who lived on deck one were health food advocates, so Mr. Bopp's cabin location seemed somehow unfortunate. She straightened her business suit before touching the call icon engraved into the wall and turned on all her recording devices. Greta counted to 10, then impatiently attacked the doorbell again. Muffled slipper-clad feet hesitantly approached the door from the other side. The security eye blinked, focusing on Greta's auditor mission patch, and seemed to recoil before the door swept open, revealing a thin, nervous-looking middle-aged man. Hale stood in the open door, stiffer than a rabbit in a dog's line of sight that was hoping it wouldn't be seen. But Greta kept staring at the man until he gave up and conceded she wasn't going away.
What do you want?
He nervously stuttered.
Mr. Bopp, I'm here about your group.
Group?
Your group, Mr. Bopp. The Stargazers. The club you founded and are president of.
Oh, right. That group.
Come in.
He managed to choke out. With his beak-like nose, abnormally close-set eyes, gray spiking hair, and long neck, the man reminded Greta of an ostrich, and she wouldn't have been surprised if he had tried to bury his head into the floor or wall to avoid her.
Please sit.
He gestured to a beanbag chair that looked like it had tangled with one too many house cats. In fact, Greta noted that the whole cabin appeared to have been mauled over. Disgusted, she brushed off a few loose styrofoam beans that had escaped through a suspicious-looking puncture, and what appeared to be fur before sitting down. As soon as she did, the beanbag mauler appeared from nowhere and jumped onto her lap. She immediately sneezed.
Oh, get it out of here. I'm allergic.
While Mr. Bopp extracted the cat from the room, Greta dug another sheet of smart paper out of her valise, which she handed to Hale when he returned.
Before we start, Mr. Bopp, I need you to review that document.
The stunned man hesitantly reached for the smart paper and automatically read its contents aloud.
By reading this, you accept the terms of the audit and agree to cooperate. But wait, I don't.
Hale muttered, realizing his mistake, then deflated into his own mauled beanbag chair.
Thank you, Mr. Bopp. You have been officially served the audit notice. We appreciate your cooperation. It makes the process so much easier and saves time.
But I don't understand. I filed my tax return.
It's not about you, Mr. Bopp. As I clearly stated for the record when I entered the cabin, it's about your social club, the Stargazers. But our group only collects a few hundred credits a year. It hardly seems worth the auditor's time. And we want to make sure every penny of that money donated to your organization is spent on your club's mission, Mr. Bopp. If we didn't hold every charity on this hollowed-out asteroid to the highest standards of accountability, it would undermine confidence in the whole system. And where would that leave the generous citizens of the True North? Certainly not strong and free.
I don't understand what you're getting at.
Hale started to protest.
Oh, that. It's just my way of segueing to the point of my visit. Nothing is really free, is it, Mr. Bopp? And that's why we have a charitable donation system, to help pay for the little distractions, like yours, that keeps everyone happy. It will take several more generations, Mr. Bopp, before we get to our destination. We need those distractions, and we need the financial system that supports them. It's why the Directorate is so careful to ensure that everyone follows the rules. I'm just here doing my small part to make it all work.
Hale had gone back into rabbit mode, sitting perfectly still, staring, uncomprehending at his unwelcome guest as she continued to talk.
I'm guessing that you're not going to offer me a coffee or a snack or something. Now, just because we need to deal with a bit of unpleasant business shouldn't mean one forgoes all social graces, Mr. Bopp. No, I guess you're not going to be civil about this, are you? Few in your position ever are. You know, off the record, of course. It would be a nice gesture. The coffee, I mean. It wouldn't affect my decision either way. The facts always determine the outcome. But a nice fruit plate. Well, you can never tell how far a little gesture like that might go.
Without saying a word, Hale struggled out of his beanbag chair. He returned a few minutes later with a cup of instant coffee and a cube of artificial sweetener, along with a small container of cream.
I saved this for my special guests,
Hale offered, with a hint of sarcasm in his voice.
75% edible oil.
Greta examined the ancient-looking creamer suspiciously.
No best before.
She put the cream down and took a quick sip of the coffee, wincing as it burnt down her throat.
Well, maybe we should start.
Greta put the cup down on a beat-up folding side table, then pulled two legal-sized pieces of smart paper from her valise. She handed one to a reluctant Hale, who nervously fingered the sheet like it was impregnated with a deadly virus.
It won't hurt you, Mr. Bopp. It's only a copy slave to my original, so you can follow along as I outline the case.
She looked down at her sheet, then up at Hale, who had somehow sunk deeper into his beanbag chair, so only his head was visible.
Well, Mr. Bopp, the regulations that govern all charitable organizations on this ship state that donated funds can only be used to support the organization's goals as described in your mission statement. Now, to refresh our memories, would you mind reading the Stargazer's mission? To make it easier, I've already pulled it up for you. It's the first paragraph on your smart paper.
Hale nervously fumbled with his sheet.
Okay, thanks. Let's see. The mission of the Deck One Stargazers Social Club is to be
one of True North's leading providers of meaningful distraction. Using our members' knowledge of the cosmos to differentiate our unique club, we seek to develop the most engaging and satisfying pastime on the True North and in the colony fleet. That sounds more or less correct, but what's your point, Auditor?
Actually, that's a direct quote, Mr. Bopp. And you may call me Ms. Humboldt. The point is that all the funds donated to your club must be used to achieve that mission. You are in the business of making stargazing an interesting pastime, and nothing else, which in and of itself must be quite a challenge.
Actually, most people find stargazing rather interesting, Ms. Humboldt.
Greta looked up skeptically from her smart paper.
And are you sure that's all you're doing?
Yes, Ms. Humboldt. We rent blister time for our members to get together and appreciate the subtle beauty of the heavens. Oh, and we cover the odd bar tab afterward. That's the engaging and satisfying part of our mission statement. You know, it helps get discussion going, a beer or two. Totally all above board, of course. I file the bar receipts every quarter with the directorate.
So you say, Mr. Bopp. But let's move on.
Greta purred as she slid a finger across her smart paper, changing pages.
Now, can you explain what this is?
Hale squinted at his sheet.
Oh, that. It's our ship net bill. Chews up a lot of our budget, but we do need to keep in contact with our members. Let them know when things are happening. Exactly. 69.3% of your annual budget, Mr. Bopp. Well, what can I say? Shipnet access is expensive. There's only two suppliers, and with the new charges for messages, well, you know. No, I don't know, Mr. Bopp. I have no interest in shipnet access rates. If you feel that you have a valid case, you should lodge a complaint against the competition directorate. However, that's not my concern. Now, what is how you use that access.
We sent out a few messages, so what?
Hale questioned in a short-lived swell of defiance that quickly withered in the beam of Greta's stare. Greta hated saucy responses, especially from subjects who feigned stupidity, forcing her to connect the dots for them.
So I guess I need to put it all together for you, Mr. Bopp,
she spat out in a patronizing tone.
Not all of your communications were sent to your members, were they?
Confused, Hale leaned back in his beanbag and appeared to be thinking. Then, with some difficulty, leaned forward.
Oh, well, we occasionally order pizza in for our board meetings. They're organic, vegetarian, and gluten-free crusts.
When Greta didn't respond, he nervously added,
Okay, I admit it. They're not really organic veggie. We just get the pizza place on Deck 3 to put our orders in an organic food box. They're really meat lovers' specials. It's the neighbors on Deck 1, you see. They wouldn't understand. I'm doing my best to try and fit in.
He shrugged. Greta ignored Hale, letting him nervously blather on while she paged through the files on her smart paper. When she had located what she was looking for, she cut him off.
Mr. Bopp, please look at the messages in your communication logs that I flagged for you.
Hale moved his finger slowly down his sheet, occasionally stopping to examine an entry.
Oh, those,
he quietly dismissed.
Yes, those, Mr. Bopp. The messages you sent on behalf of your group to the bridge, and subsequently to the captain, his executive, the chief astrogator, and finally the steering committee on mission progress itself. But, Miss Humboldt, you were obviously engaging in political lobbying, Mr. Bopp, and lobbying has nothing to do with stargazing. But we only wanted to help out.
Hale tried to interject.
Before you launch into some feeble attempt to justify your group's blatantly illegal activities, Mr. Bopp, let me read you the pertinent part of the law. Page 401, Section 12, Paragraph 3, and I quote,
Greta fixed a steely glare at Hale, then recited the paragraph from memory, all the time keeping eye contact with him.
A registered shipboard charity must devote substantively all of its resources to charitable purposes, and only part of its resources to nonpartisan political activities of an ancillary
an incidental nature. The communication records show that, in fact, a substantial amount of time and resource was spent in creating and responding to those messages I flagged. In fact, in the last month, you have spent more time on them than watching the stars, Mr. Bob. I dare say that the ship's management is neither ancillary nor incidental to your club's purpose.
Satisfied she had made her point, Greta relaxed back into the beanbag chair, then gave Hale an insincere professional smile. The man sat shaking for a moment before his face began to turn beet red.
I can't believe it. You must all be crazy, he burst out. Maybe there's not enough oxygen up front or something. It should be bloody obvious why we had no choice but to send those messages. And instead of a rational response, they send you? Let me remind you that you're engaging in political lobbying, Mr. Bob. Things like that can cause people to start questioning the leadership, and that's something we cannot afford. We're literally in the middle of nowhere. But we discovered nothing of importance, Mr. Bop. Now please, read the order I brought up on your smart paper.
Hale quickly scanned the document.
But this is outrageous. How can I defend the group if I can't even talk about the content of the messages we sent? You know, we figured out... Mr. Bop, if you please. You can't tell me. Even I don't know what's in those messages. Only that you sent them, and that they are attempts to influence senior ship officers. It's a clear violation of your charitable status. Or do you want to deny sending them? You could always claim that someone broke into your ShipNet account. Things like that have happened before.
Hale shook his head in frustration.
No, this is lunacy.
He began, then stopped in mid-sentence, a smile suddenly growing on his face.
Okay. Can I defend our actions as long as I don't reveal the content of the messages? I suppose you could, Mr. Bop, but let's review the cost of the communications involved, just to make sure we've done our calculation correctly. Who knows, maybe I missed a decimal place or something that could have inadvertently put you over the limit.
Greta knew that was impossible, but needed to get Hale to review the books so she could record his acceptance of him.
I'd like to request that we finish this in the blister,
Hale suddenly blurted out.
Why? I think more clearly there. It'll help me remember the details. A very unusual request, Mr. Bob, but I'm here to ensure that everything is done accurately. If it will help you and make this go faster, then I agree.
The observation blister was occupied when they arrived. Greta impatiently keyed in an override code and slid the hatch open, throwing a harsh beam of light on an embarrassed couple caught in mid-kiss. They started to angrily complain until they saw the patch on Greta's suit jacket. Then grudgingly, they slid out of the hatch, leaving it free for Greta and Hale. After the hatch had closed, Hale relaxed and glided confidently to the center of the space. Once there, he turned to face the stars, then backed carefully up against the back wall. Next, he pulled a marker out of his pocket and traced around his head.
Hey, what are you doing, Mr. Bob? You're defacing public property,
Greta complained. Hale ignored her and leaned against the wall, positioning his head in the outline. Then he held out an arm, thumb extended, sighting down it with one eye to some invisible point. Next, he walked over and drew a circle on the glass. Hale moved back to the wall and again positioned his head in the crude outline and nodded. Then repeated the process, drawing a smaller circle to one side of the first. Finally, he turned to a mystified Greta.
It's not perfect, but it will have to do. Now you try and tell me what you see. Really, Mr. Bob, I don't understand how this is pertinent to the case. Humor me, Miss Humboldt, please. It won't take much of your time.
Reluctantly, Greta moved over to the crudely drawn head on the wall. She suspiciously examined the spot, sniffed the air over it, before reaching into her valise to retrieve a bottle of hand sanitizer. She misted the wall, waited for a moment, and then experimentally placed her head into the outline, facing the glass viewport.
And what am I supposed to be seeing, Mr. Bop?
She querulously demanded.
Look through the bigger circle and tell me what you see. A bright blue star and a dimmer red star in the smaller one. So what? Miss Humboldt, if you look again in 3 or 4 days, then you might understand.
Hill pocketed his marker and left. Greta stared at the circles for a few more minutes, trying to figure out what the man was up to, got bored, and exited the blister. She took the next few days to reflect on the case. Oddly, Hale hadn't denied or challenged the claims. Only a month ago, there had been a lawn bowling club, which leased space in the Central Arboretum. The club had been caught lobbying the Environmental Controls Committee to increase the humidity, so the grass on their close-crop greens would stop drying out. Unfortunately, the added moisture resulted in an explosion of mold throughout the ship. And when accused, the group's members had created an elaborate attempt to obfuscate their actions. And that was the normal response to an audit. But not with the stargazers. They hid nothing. Greta tried to put the thought out of her mind and convince herself to be thankful that it was an open and shut case, one of the easiest in recent months. But Hale Bopp had left her a puzzle, and Greta didn't like things that weren't resolved. So when she finally finished the report, Greta found herself unable to submit it. This time, she had booked the blister so it was empty when she arrived. Greta had to work hard to find the outline head on the back wall. It had almost been worn off, and at first she couldn't see the circles. But as her eyes adjusted to the gloom, she could make out smudges where a determined cleaner had failed to completely eradicate the marks. As before, the larger circle contained the bright blue star, but the smaller one was empty. She hunted around until she found the red star down and to the right of the smaller circle. She stared at the dimmer star, then mentally drew a circle, using the bright star as its center. The imaginary circumference sliced through the now empty smaller circle and the red star.
"That just can't be,"
Greta told the empty blister. She performed the exercise again, this time marking the arc with her index finger.
"We're traveling in a circle."
Hale was waiting at a tube station when the message tone rang in his ears. He pulled his personal smart paper from his pocket, shielding the sheets so no one could see what was on it. The official emblem on the back of the folded paper already told him who had sent it. Hale sat for several minutes, reluctant to open the message. He still hoped that rationality had prevailed, but as his nervous fingers fumbled the sheet open, his heart sank.
The terse note simply read,
"As a result of a thorough investigation performed by Ms. G. Humboldt, Senior Investigator for the Auditor General, the Charity's Directorate, Auditor Division, regrets to inform you that the Stargazers Social Club has been determined to be in violation of the terms of the Charitable Donation Statute. Effective immediately, the aforementioned group is to suspend operations, and its members are hereby directed not to disclose the nature of the transgression or any details pertaining to it." In disgust, Hale threw his smart paper on the floor and walked away.
Thanks for listening to Makeshift Stories 84, The Audit. We hope that you've enjoyed this month's episode. As always, if you like what we are doing, please tell your friends about us, or write a review on iTunes or Stitcher Radio, or check us out in Google+ or Facebook. We love hearing your comments, so send us an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. We release a new story every month between the 15th and the 20th. To listen to Makeshift Stories on your iOS or Android device, please download Stitcher Radio from iTunes or the Google Play Store. As always, this month's episode was written and read by Alan V. Hare. The opening and closing theme is Podsafe Music by David Hume. Makeshift Stories is released under a Creative Commons non-commercial attribution, no derivative license, which means that you're free to share our stories. Just remember to credit us and don't alter anything.